I think. We got a bit of a late start. The room that we were originally in didn't pan out, and it said we didn't have any viewers, so we didn't really matter, but I see people asking us questions.
We're ready to go now.
Yeah, but seemed to be ready to go. We didn't just cancel out of the dang cast. New guy driving here.
Looks like we're frozen, maybe. Why do I not have power? There we go. Looks like you'll have to bear with us a little. Looks like the internet is it's a little flaky here. Mostly hotel internet, so it's a...
Okay, but anyway, yeah, so here we are at...
It said we didn't have any viewers, so we didn't really matter, but...
Oh, what the heck?
Questions.
We're ready to go now.
Oh, hold on, guys. We got some noob problems here. When you do this twice a year, it shows you forget what you're supposed to do. Trying to get to a question.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Hopefully we still have the hangout going. Anyway, so back to what we're doing. Wisp America 2015, St. Louis, Union Station Hotel. Most interesting hotel I've ever been in. They built a hotel and a mall inside of an old 1800s train station. And everything just looks nice. It's not just a big box with random crap.
It's a pretty nice hotel. It's spaced out good. The vendor area is good. I mean, it's so far it's been a really good show.
Actually has some Q&A here asking when we're going to start. We're starting now, Joey Craig. So hopefully.
We're about 15 minutes late.
Hopefully you're still here.
Yeah, hopefully you're still with us.
Moving on here. JJ's been coming in and out. Not sure if he's actually here at the moment or not.
Yeah, I'm here for the moment. I'm muting the mic.
So we've got there's a lot going on. This is the largest spring show Wisp has had. I think they're right around 600 attendees. Last number I heard was like 596 with more people signing up. And the first fall show, which is the big show. First fall show we had was only 613. So our little spring show is now almost as big as our first big show. I didn't really think there's a lot going into the show that was new, but then I realized that it's been 6 months since we did a show. A lot has happened. Lots of new things I've seen at the show that I hadn't really seen elsewhere yet.
It seems like to me there's two major aspects of the show, of the vendor side of things, LTE and fiber. There's a couple fiber vendors here. They sell anything from handholds to fiber splicing material, things like that, and they're actually exhibiting. And it's not a training type of situation. They're actually exhibiting, and there's four LTE vendors here.
Yeah.
They're kind of making a splash.
At Telrad was someone that I've wanted to talk about for a few months now. Telrad, I guess, has been around for a very long time. I guess they've been making like teleco switches with Nortel for like 200 years or something like that. they bought out a piece of Alvarion when it blew up a couple of years ago or a year ago, and they've made some big strides on their stuff. It's not for everybody. And Patrick, who's Patrick's, if you've been in the industry for a while, Patrick's been around since the beginning. With different companies, usually an Alvarion or Alvarion-centric company.
Yeah.
But he'll be the first to tell you that we're not for everybody.
There's two pieces to the Telrad stuff. What they call their NOC software, which is the brains of everything, and then the actual equipment piece. The equipment piece, really, in the grand scheme of things, isn't too bad. You know, the Knock software is the big investment, which, you know, that's rightfully so. You know, the software is what really drives a lot of these LTE and even, you know, some of the older WiMAX networks. LTE is, you know, very, very software specific. Well, not really software specific, but very software driven. So you're buying the Knock software, you're buying the license to, you know, put up the antennas and things like that. And the antennas really, the cost there is the bulk of the antenna. I mean, if you want to do 6x6 MIMO, they're six antennas, right?
Yeah.
Six physical antennas. So, you know, you're buying more stuff.
Yeah. And the Telrad solution, based on WiMAX with an upgrade path to LTE, which we've been hearing for years from many companies, only they've actually done it. They've actually have people that have converted from WiMAX to LTE. They've got a ton of stuff going on. They've got software that they'll load onto your Cambium 320 WiMAX platform, and people that have done that, it's an instant performance improvement. You know, Telrad is pricey for the WISP space in that a base station, which they recommend three for 360 degree coverage. Base stations like, I'm not sure, eight-ish thousand bucks. And then they've got back end software, different, you know, both monitoring and you know, user authentication and just LTE control. There's different components, different ways of doing things. They're working on a version that doesn't need as much of the back-end software. It's just software built into the CP or built into the AP to reduce that upfront cost. Also, the some features go away that have the LTE benefit, but if you're small, you're not going to use that yet anyway.
Yeah, and then some of it is the, you know, the LTE WiMAX, the carrier world. The brains of everything isn't what the normal WISP is used to. It's not in the antenna, it's at the big box at the bottom. So, you know, they've just, you know, in natural progression of things, that's the way the carrier world does it. So that's, you know, that's the first step in getting it to, you know, the rest of the world. And then, like Mike says, they're you know, eventually maybe a roadmap to consolidate that into, you know, smaller pieces.
And they're also working on a hosted version of some of those pieces. Just different levels of features that you need versus the cost to make it happen, to embrace the market, make it as easy as they can to get in, because it is so different. You're thinking, you know, why am I spending $8,000 for a base station? And from some of the videos that we've seen, hearing some of the feedback, to people that haven't seen the math that Patrick throws out from the engineers, you'd say it's magic. You know, they've got situations where there's entire non-line of sight in 3.65 band, which is not, I mean, there's been pure wave and other things like that doing stuff in 3.65 to make it a little better. But these guys have really put money into the physical components, hardware. It's all big boy, heavy-duty stuff as far as the amplifiers, things like that.
And this is stuff that's working. You know, it's deployed today. People are using it. It's not, you know, hey, this is all theory. You know, this is what we're coming out with next month, next week, next year, whatever. It's actually deployed. So it's something someone can say, hey, I want to buy this. I want to deploy it. Okay, you know. Let's get it shipped to you.
It is LTE standards on the access layer. So lots of times when a vendor comes out with some new magic they've tweaked, there's a lot of doubters because, you know, we don't know it's been proven. Well, it's just LTE. There's 30 companies and billions of dollars of investment, and, you know, Ericsson and Huawei and Alcatel, and, you know, all these guys working on this. It's a standard. And it's new standard revisions come out, adding higher QAMs and, you know, beamforming and higher orders of of MIMO and stuff like that. It's just, you know, things they can do, firmware upgrade or just a firmware upgrade. You know, they've got miles of non-line of sight coverage. People with like neg 97 signals pulling like 65 megs off of a tower.
I think I heard somewhere the radios themselves are sensitive to like neg 140 or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Well, like, and they do have a different number system because of LTE.
Yeah.
And then its conversion is roughly add 30 to the number that they have in the LTE world to get the number that we're used to. But even still, at those low numbers, it still works out to be a great response. But for those guys that are using Motorola 900 because it was the best you could get in the middle of nowhere, even though it was only 4 megs at the access point, you know, I hear guys that have 20 of these access points up on one tower. I'm not sure what they cost. If they cost $2,000, that's $40,000 worth of AP to get 80 megs of throughput. Three APs of Telrad will get you 300 meg.
Yeah.
With this version, next version will be double that, just a firmware upgrade for less money.
Yep.
So for those non line of sight guys, like, you know, JJ, I'm, you know, you got mountains and trees and forests, might be something to take a look at. At least if it's just not a trial.
I may have missed it. I was kind of in and out just a little bit there on that dissertation. But did they talk about cost at all? I know you were talking about the software being.
Yeah. There's different pieces of it that have different costs. A base station is about $8,000.
Then you add on your antennas. That's one of the real variables in this. You know, if you do 3x3, you know, obviously you don't need as many antennas as 4x4 or 6x6. So, you know, if you want to spread it out to the top end of the spectrum, you know, you're buying more physical antennas to make this happen. So that's where, you know, you buy the base station, you buy the antennas, you buy the software.
But yeah, so like one base station, 360 degree coverage, all the soup to nuts, I think they're saying is about $30,000, including the back end that handles like 50 towers worth of stuff. Now, we're just going off of rumors and numbers. Don't remember for sure.
Surprises started.
I heard some numbers from a distributor.
I heard some numbers at some point, but no, definitely, if this is even remotely of use to you, contact them for actual, you know, quotes and prices and pieces. You know, they'll work through all the details and options. But I mean, being able to do 100 meg through trees at miles, and people are doing it. It's definitely something to look at for those non-line of sight cases. And you know, they're among the first to praise other people. They have a lot of praise for the orange juice guys, Mimosa, and really doing something different and higher quality, and, you know, where things are really going to be for the Wisp industry in the next couple of years.
Well, and Telrad's not the only LTE one here either.
Well, yeah, you know, there's numerous LTEs here. I think it's under 4.
Telrad just seems to be, you know, making a big splash. Because they have a product. I haven't personally talked to some of the other ones, but I know, you know, a lot of people are talking about Telrad because they can get it today.
And then the nice thing about Telrad too is, you know, there are other LTEs that, you know, you can use other stuff, but they pride themselves on their CPE and their base stations that they built with better components than the other guys. So while you can get similar results perhaps from somebody else, they pride themselves on, you'll get better performance with us because we use better LNAs and whatever the hell else is inside there.
You know, a lot of that's just marketing too, you know, not to put down the other folks, I think it boils down to, I haven't heard anybody on what's some of the other ones that are the LTE ones, because I've heard from, you know, I haven't heard anybody that says, yeah, I have.
Well, yeah, like, you know, there's always guys saying, you know, I have this in the field doing that right now, and these guys report this.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, we don't necessarily know on the other LTE folks, you know, how their stuff runs, because we don't have any, you know, actual WISPs reporting back, hey, I have one of these deployed. I think we've talked to, you know, two or three people that said, we have the Telrad, whether they have, you know, the WiMAX going, or they're, you know, they're just now deploying the LTE and they're seeing, you know, their first results and stuff like that. So, you know, it's, you know, the one of the biggest benefits of LTE is it's a standard. So if you're LTE certified, you know, it's up to, okay, how well can you deliver that LTE? You know, is your stuff, you know, is your stuff, you know, carrier quality and, you know, stuff like that. So, and then, you know, I don't know, this time I haven't seen too many of the non-LTE vendors come out other than Mimosa. I mean, you can talk about Mimosa, but, you know, other than Mimosa, there's not a big splash in anything else, really, that we don't know about, right?
Yeah, they just announced Monday or Tuesday, I forget which day, I think it was Monday, they're calling the B5 Lite, I think, which is just, they took their CPE, made it optimized for a point-to-point backhaul. I think they're saying like a 700 meg throughput for $300 for the whole link.
The whole link, not just a side, the whole link. So what do you think about that, JJ?
I think that's definitely some attractive pricing for whole link. Have either of you two used any of the Mimosa stuff to see what kind of performance you're getting in the real world versus their PH raw numbers?
That there's been several people posting on AFMUG and Wispilis. I don't. They've had some supply issues due to the longshoremen strike. You know, there's just a ton of boats sitting off the coast that can't actually. there's a ton of boats off the coast with products for everybody, not just, you know, not just Mimosa, not just Wisp suppliers, but, you know, cars and dolls and whatever the heck else comes out of Asia. Waiting, you know, and then I think that has been resolved, and they're just clearing through backlog now, those longshoremen guys, but...
Well, the Mimosa backhaul is, they're still a half duplex radio, right?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, the guys I've talked to that actually have some deployed in the field, they're liking them better than the Air Fiber 5s. You know, they say the, for whatever reason, and I haven't looked into it too much, is they see better latency, you know, across their link. And I'm not sure, I mean, you've talked to Mimosa enough to know why would that be compared to Air Fiber?
Well, they have a couple different settings that you can choose. Basically, it's choose your latency.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously you would think you want the least latency, but there's throughput hits for each one.
Yeah.
So you have to decide which is more important to you, latency or throughput. And it's not dramatic. It's not like it goes from, you know, 0.1 milliseconds to 30 milliseconds. It's like 2.46 or 2.48 or something like that. I'm not sure what the throughputs correspond to, but it's not a drastic thing. It's just, you know, how you want to optimize the network. You know, it was just, you know, as they, you know, weigh the market, see what people are interested in, you know, they thought they could make a splash with that product. You know, I got here Monday, and I spent 2 to 3 hours talking with Jamie Fink of Mimosa, one of their founders. Most of the stuff I can't say. You know, they've been executing well so far. They've come from a background of people that have made very big, you know, Polycom 2 wire. I don't have any doubt that they'll follow through with their plans. And let's just say that from the things that I was told over the next year and a half, it's like everything I've ever wanted.
So with that being said, do they have any plans on higher gain, longer, more directivity CPEs? Because that's been one of the things why I'm not even considering is because a lot of our shots are longer.
And on the Mimosa stuff, their multi-point platform is debuting soon. Sometime, I forget when it was.
But they have a connectorized version.
Right, yeah. I think that their standard integrated one is like $100, and their connectorized one is like 110 or 120, something like that, is what they were saying. So then you put on anything you want. But then let's just say that through some of the stuff that the newer AC standards and revisions support, allow them to do some very interesting things in more dense landscapes. Lots of WISPs have traditionally been rural, at least the past 10 years. But for the suburban, urban guys, there's a lot of cool stuff coming that will really help them, big throughput, compete against the wireline guys. One thing that they have mentioned, on the WISP list lately, there's a lot of, fuss made about the, cloud systems, AirSerum's cloud side, Mimosa is cloud-based. They're providing you with a MIB soon and different APIs, and, they're open to do many things. Lots of people, it's kind of a, almost religious thing if they don't want their stuff in the cloud. I much, much prefer it to be on mine. Some things have to be on mine. I've already got my own infrastructure to do that. But one thing that they've already noticed with the cloud, with the limited distribution they have so far, they've already had a case where two operators on the same tower or same building were running Mimosa products and experiencing issues. They both reached out to Mimosa for support, and from the cloud monitoring stuff, they were able to say, you guys need to work out your sync issues. Basically, one had a master, one had a slave on the same tower, so therefore they were shouting over each other. Once they made them both masters or both slaves, whichever that worked out to be, they lived in harmony. And because of the cloud stuff, Mimosa knew both operators had the same equipment on the same structure.
Yeah, from a support standpoint, the cloud stuff will allow, the manufacturer to, pull in a lot of that data and analyze it should a support issue come up. So instead of saying, well, turn on your logging and send me the logging and all this stuff, they can log in and see it. Okay, we already have this. They're not sitting there, watching it all day, every day, but they have access to it.
But lots of cool stuff coming out of those guys. I look forward to what they have coming.
And the other, the other kind of nice thing here at the show is there's at least two major fiber vendors that sell anything from duct to, handholds to, fiber patch panels to splicing machines. I think the Fiber Weekend at Vegas has really kind of opened up some of these vendors to say, hey, we need to be here, and we need to show people these products because they don't see them otherwise. Unless you're, it's kind of where do you go to see the fiber stuff unless you want to go specifically to, some fiber telco show or something like that. And even then, there's such a mismatch as the telephone companies have been doing fiber for years. So, they're, it's not new to them. So they know what, microduct and interduct is, and they already have splicing machines and stuff like that. So they have reps that come along, and they come to them. So it's kind of nice to see, some of these folks coming to these shows that are, hey, we can help you with your fiber deployments.
There's a couple of vendors here that handle the electronic side of the equation too. Dasan, something like that. I know Chuck's been working with them on a pond solution. Chuck started mostly AE. And lots of people are still forging ahead with AE, even on, or AE active Ethernet, just doing raw basic Ethernet. Lots of people are still forging ahead with that, but Chuck's wanting to play around.
Some people are doing GPON.
It's with the GPON, and the Dasan is a non-mainstream vendor that does that. That might be a little bit more palatable to a WISP. But then you've also got Alcatel Lucent here doing that same sort of thing. Business System Connections. I've bought stuff from them several times over the years. They were the North American vendor for Planet switches. They've got a bunch of fiber, outdoor, not outdoor rated, but more temperature extreme handling switches with fiber interfaces to do those AE environments. Is the big mic on in here? That's sounded very. All right. So there's a ton of fiber stuff going on. I guess I don't beat on the table too much. What's some of the other interesting things I've seen? Lots of
There's a couple traffic engineering type companies. These are one, aren't they?
Yeah.
I can't.
I don't know how to pronounce them either. Sisei, Sisei. First heard of them a couple weeks ago. Some of you may be more familiar with the Procera product, which has been out about a year or two now. You can buy those through PowerCode, it looks like, is their North American place.
They have a good partnership with PowerCode.
PowerCode seems to be like their WISP-centric thing, and PowerCode's kind of integrated their product with that, optionally.
These folks are doing, layer 7 traffic manipulation. You subscribe to their service, or I'm not sure what their model is as far as sales and things like that, but they take care of, if you want to prioritize Netflix traffic, we can do that. I look at it like the Barracuda type model is you have an appliance, that appliance does stuff on your network, but it also goes to our database, grabs our database that we know about all these different traffic types.
And it's not just for people with full pipes that need to manage congestion issues. The SciSA guys were showing me their some of their stuff, and even places that aren't facing major congestion. But just the way TCP behaves on different traffic types, it just kind of makes a mess of things. If you watch Torch on Netflix, you'll see it burst incredibly for a short amount of time within nothing, and that that causes a lot of issues with different protocols, and they just kind of smooth it all out so that things work a little nicer. And there's a ton of companies that Barracuda has something similar to that. Procera has been around a couple of years now. A lot has been around for a long time. SciSA actually mentioned a few other people I didn't recognize, but those are mostly box-centric models. You might have to buy a $20,000 box.
Yeah.
In addition to their however many thousand a year subscription model for service support updates to the definitions. SciSA. You can deploy it on your own virtual infrastructure or your own bare metal. They have some recommended, I think Dell HP Supermicro boxes. But if you have a vSphere environment, I do, I believe you do, JJ. you can deploy a template with Sisei on it, and you're good to go. You can give it a try. You don't have to spend $20,000 on a box to see if you like it. And their pricing model is dollar per month per user. So you could spin up this infrastructure and 40 people, it costs you $40 a month, who cares?
Sure.
If you've got 200 customers, 1,000 customers, you know, you could just trial it for a short amount of time. If you like it, you can just keep doing it. You don't have that large upfront sunk cost if you want to expand from a small trial to a large one. It could be used for like a managed type service for an enterprise or something like that. You know, someone that, you know, a customer of yours may want that service. And at $1 a month per customer, you can handle most different sizes. Now, obviously, you have to pay for your hardware to handle it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a setup fee and.
But it makes it easier for small guys. It makes it easier for guys who just want to give it a shot. You know. Without committing a ton of dollars, that maybe you may want to spend on a backhaul or something.
The other thing I heard, have you heard this, JJ? And maybe you've heard it too, Mike. Is not really related to the show, but just talking to some of the vendors and things. One of the vendors said Juniper is going to release their Juno S onto x86.
Yeah, it's called the VMX. I've talked to my Juniper sales rep a couple times. It's pretty new in the process. They don't quite have things ready to go yet, from what I understand. It's not going to be MicroTik pricing, obviously.
No, but it'll be on at least x86 hardware.
But it will permit you to do everything Juniper does.
And I'm sure they'll still follow the same kind of licensing model.
I'm not sure how much of the licensing stuff they want me to say, but you know, it is a licensing model based upon, you know, traditionally, you know, features. You know, you got a standard license and a premium license, but because they're not selling you big and small boxes, it's also performance. If you want, you know, you can a 1 gig license, a 10 gig license, I'm assuming since it's keyed like that, you can just scale it. You know, you can start with the 1, and when you surpass 1, you can probably just upgrade to the 10.
Yeah.
How far it goes, I don't know. But, you get all the Juniper software goodness, you know, a BGP that works, a full VPLS implementation, carrier Ethernet, all the things that we actually want, only it's not at MicroTik prices. For some people it's worth it, some people it's not. We just have to see how things go. I'm definitely interested in them, especially as I do some more of my expansions. You know, the other stuff that Justin and I are working on, I may have more of a use for something that's a bit more professional.
Well, and part of it is the support too. Once you're talking about carrier Ethernet and things like that, you need the support. So, you know, you're going to get that with a company like Juniper. Does it fit for everything? Not really, but, you know, it just gives you another option to say, hey, you know, I can load this on my own hardware now.
MicroTik, you know, over the years they have said that they they're going back and forth, and if they're going to do a real support model, and you know, once you talk about the amount of dollars you'll spend on support, you know, every now and then they get excited that they're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then nothing ever happens. But I've heard of people going to the Cisco's and Junipers and whatnot with a support issue. They discover a bug of some kind, and they fix it and like right away. And send it over to you a customized beta load to make sure it fixes the problem, incorporate that in the next release. MicroTik does a little bit of that, but not profoundly. And definitely not at the rate that these other guys do.
Sure. So, you know, another little tidbit I heard is from one of the folks is they are expecting a router OS 7 he called it an alpha version, but he wasn't sure if it's going to be alpha or beta by the end of next month. He said he's supposed to have one in his hand by the end of next month. So, you know, going to some of these shows, you know, that's nothing really related to, you know, the Wisp industry, but yet it is. You know, you pick up little tidbits like that, and, you know, little off-the-record type conversations. And,
I have lots of those. That's what makes doing this. I had to stop someone earlier. Can I talk about this, or can I not talk about this?
Yeah. Well, and it helps because, you know, I think a lot of these folks, they're willing to talk about their product, you know, under an NDA or something like that, because it helps you. You know, you're here, you're saying, hey, I'm here, I'm trying to spend money, what's the best way I can spend my money? Well, we're coming out with this, you know, here's our roadmap. And it's also a sales tactic too, because, oh, okay, you know, you've helped me kind of make my own roadmap of the products I'm going to buy. And then you're able to say, yeah, I'll wait on your product because you've kind of shown me what's going on.
And just to kind of expand upon that a little bit, camera kind of sucks. Package of SFPs.
How many were in there to begin with?
I had 6 to start with. I've been handing them out as I talk to the vendors that have requested SFP cages on their devices in the past. Basically what I do is I take an SFP out of the package, I hand it to the vendor, and I say, give this to your engineer. Tell him I want to plug this into your box. Because you've said you're going to do it, and you haven't. I can assume that they don't know what it is. So here is an SFP. Make it work in your box. So far, I've handed one to Ubiquiti, Cambium, and Mimosa with different. You know, and it's part joke, part no, really, make it happen. Why haven't you done this yet? You know, different responses from okay, you know, we'll take it back. Not really getting it to, yeah, our next product is definitely having that, to, you know, there's a lot that's happening. Some alternative things that aren't quite what I want, but are really cool and, you know, will help bridge the gap in the meantime. I've made presentations, apparently. I've been told that there have been now more than one presentation where I have been mentioned as handing out someone has been handing out SFPs to the vendors in regards to, you know, them taking feedback from their customers.
Yeah.
They can't forget it when they go home and there's an SFP sitting in their bag.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we need to do that. And I bring that up constantly because I want it. And you will too in a couple of years if you don't right now.
Oh, we got Scott with OnRamp Indiana sitting here with us. What's one of the things you've taken away from the show so far?
Man, there's just tons of technology. The most of the stuff's pretty hot. It seems like the Telrad stuff's the hot thing this week. I just don't know about, you know, the Telrad's based on a 3.65, and then they've got a software upgrade that's maybe coming at some point or another. But
well,
pretty decent.
Like they've already delivered on the WiMAX to LTE upgrades to people.
Yeah.
So I imagine that it will be, you know, as the big boy LTE vendors get things ready, they'll be moving forward. Time up yet? I don't know what the schedule is.
Yeah,
like.
We're probably getting low.
Access points are kind of expensive, but it seems like they can deliver pretty high bandwidth to the end user.
245. Yeah, we got a few more minutes yet that we're allowed in here. Have you guys seen the? I'm not sure I pronounced these guys' name. Aterlo Networks. They make a firmware you can flash onto your home router. Linksys, D-Link, they have a few that they support. that does, you plug in a USB hard drive and it does Netflix caching.
Oh, okay. Is that the one they're talking about? If you wanted to wait a day, you could watch your Netflix. You just queue it up, it downloads, caches it, and then you can watch it, you know, the next night or whatever.
Yeah, it's basically what they do is you start that Netflix stream and pause it, and then go, you know, close it, go back to what you're doing. It saw that stream started, and then come 1 a.m. like on satellite, you know, from 12 to 4 or whatever, you know, it's uncapped. So then you can download all your Netflix that you wanted to watch during that free time. You watch it the next day. It's kind of like, I guess, DVD by mail, like what Netflix started with. But no, it's a...
Yeah, my biggest question to them, and they really, you know, they answered it, but they didn't answer it, was, okay, you know, Netflix says you're not supposed to really do that. You know, you're not supposed to be able to download their content, you know, for future use. So, you know, what's going to prevent a company like that from Netflix doing something around that?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, they've been hitting the big shows, making a splash, you know, CES, I think they were at a couple others. Yeah. So it's not like Netflix doesn't know that they exist.
Yeah, exactly.
And they haven't been issued a cease and desist yet that I'm, so either it's okay now or they, I don't know. Billing system changes, you know, I mentioned earlier how PowerCode's, you know, integrating with the Procera setup. You know, they started selling it, so that they just, you know, kind of worked on integrating into their platform. I saw a demo today of the new Wispon platform.
Mm-hmm.
It's been shredded for a while. It's, you know, built on Adobe Air. So it was kind of sluggish. Cross-platform support was kind of sucky. And the new one is all just HTML, you know, 5. You know, yeah. There's no proprietary stuff. It looks really nice. Tons of nice new stuff. You know, they dropped out some of the stuff that no one used.
I think we'll see billing software more and more, you know, get faster. They want to streamline it, get it faster, where it works on mobile devices, all these things all across the board. More features, you know, they want it to be a true all-in-one CRM type platform, you know, from the time the customer, you know, talks to you, to the time you install them, to the time you support them, you know, everything. So I think we'll see these billing softwares integrate more and more of these technologies, either directly or through partnerships with themselves, or, you know, partnerships with other companies.
And yeah, it's another one of the horns they beat is, you know, people are, you know, you know, how do I get my 477 information? Yep. How do I get this? And I always say, ask your billing company.
Well, I talked to Cameron from Wispon today. We're sitting up there, and he was, got his laptop out, and he's like, well, I have 5 or 6 form 477 exports to do this week. So
yeah, you know. Billing platforms solve a lot. You know, there's so many guys using QuickBooks or other things for their WISP operate, you know, and nothing's tied together. It's a mess. They don't have all these new things. As they become more sophisticated, yet easier to use, hopefully we see more WISPs adopt those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think WISPON's got tower coverage integrated in there. Product now, and I think
doing too. Not towercoverage.com, but they have an API with, you know, it's some open source stuff
they're
pulling in, and some he's pulling in a bunch of stuff.
Because Cameron's background is in RF engineering, so he, you know, he does that stuff, and so you know, he's built some tools, took some open source stuff, and, you know, he doesn't need tower coverage because he built his own.
Yeah.
Tower coverage is bad for me for a long time. It's not like, but I have Wispon before you started, and it already does it. You know, you might have a good, you know, yours may be good. Lots of people use it, but I already have this, so I don't need that.
Yeah.
Couple things I saw. I've seen them here before. Didn't really pay much attention to them. People doing Kalia stuff.
Yeah.
Yana Technologies, and there's somebody
with EdX, which is a separate company partnered with, I guess, whatever, doing, you know, different CLIA compliance things. The other thing that was interesting is that they do have a box they put on your network. Okay. But unlike the stuff back in the day where it had to be within the data stream, you know, it had to be, you're watching everything. Mm-hmm. It's just literally a box on your network. It can be in your house, in your data center, wherever it is you want to put it.
Okay.
It's just to interface between your network and them. They will connect into your MechaTick routers. I didn't ask for other brands because I don't have them, so I don't care. And they will capture that data from as many, you know, routers as necessary to get the data that's in the subpoena.
Okay.
And they will process it. They'll make sure that it's lawful data, you know, like what they're asking for and only what they're asking for. Because if the police get more than what they want, it's bad data. You know, they can't use that in court because it's other stuff.
Yeah.
And the price was that they had this unique pricing matrix where the number of WISPA members that signed up for their service dictated what it costs per month.
Oh, okay.
So if one signed up,
incentive, yeah.
You know, if one WISPA member signs up, it's like $2.99 a month for the service, for everything.
Okay.
If 500 signed up, it was only like $1.49 a month.
Okay.
No, it's a great sales tactic of, you know, you want to pay less, get your buddy to pay for it too.
Yeah.
And lots of people
call CLIA stuff is something they have to do.
That
if you're a serious network operator, you have to have a plan for CLIA.
That cause, you know, back when that first started, you know, Part 15.org and whatnot, it was, you know, Part 15 made a policy, FBI okayed it, so all you had to do was say, yeah, I'm with Part 15. Well, they haven't existed for years, and I'm sure the requirements have changed by then too.
Yeah.
So if you did that,
well,
6 years ago,
probably the same, still updated, but you know, you need an updated CLIA policy to keep up with, you know, the times, and you know, you need an updated CLIA. Okay, CLIA 3.0 is coming soon. We're going a little bit, not quite an hour, but we're going to lose the room pretty soon.
Yeah, so. The people coming in about 10 minutes, next session starts.
But just feel free to ask questions on Facebook. We're going to be here for another day. This is Wednesday. We'll be here, you know, until tomorrow. We can go around to exhibitors, ask questions. I know I got some pictures, the posts and stuff like that, of different equipment and, you know, some geek porn type stuff. And you know, hit us up, ask questions, find us at the show, whatever. Buy us a beer. We'll buy you a beer.
I'm not buying many beers, but I'll take many beers.
I'll take many beers, yeah. But, yeah.
JJ, anything more from you?
I don't know if he's still here. I saw the where it was just you.
Oh, yep. I guess he dropped off. I guess maybe he had to actually go work or something.
But, yeah. Do we have to wait on Greg to upload this?
Nope. As soon as I stop this, it will be posted to YouTube.
Rock out.
It won't show up on the...
It won't show up on the Brothers Wisp page, but we'll get it on Facebook and everything else. It'll
Good question, Justin Miller. Mum has been moved up. It's normally in September. Now it's
April.
April.
Yes.
Miami. It's gonna be Miami. I think about that earlier. I forgot to mention it. So it's been moved up 4 months, 5 months.
What's the dates? Like the 21st or something?
I have no idea. It is towards the end of the month, but they have to be doing something special.
Yeah. There's all kinds of rumors. My prediction, here's my prediction, is that Router OS 7 is coming out this fall. They want to get all the mums out of the way, so they're back in Latvia to support version 7. That's my prediction.
But my hope is that they have big hardware available. Most of their mums are in, you know, non-US. They're in Central America, Southeast Asia, you know, India, Africa. And like a 1072 just doesn't do them any good,
you know, 10 gigs is more than most of those countries have for internet, period.
Yeah. April 23rd to the 24th in Miami.
So announcing, you know, this product is now shipping that does 80 gigs.
Yeah, announcing that.
They don't care.
Announcing that in Cambodia is probably not going to be a good, you know.
Yeah. Yay! Yeah, they don't care. But we do. Justin Miller thinks it could be the dude. There's been, you know, I've seen talk about job postings for Android and iOS developers.
I would buy Giannis mini beers for the dude. And that's saying a lot. I might have to take out a loan for that.
But
so Giannis, lots of beers if dude comes out.
At so hopefully it's something that we actually want. All these vendors seem to have a habit of.
In Russia, we give you what we want.
At lots of vendors, yeah, they give you almost what you want, and not what you actually want, which is why. I ask them nicely two or three times privately, and then I go nicely a few times publicly, and then I publicly harass them and beat them until they make what I want.
And then you say F you and go on with life.
But, well, until somebody else does, and then they realize they're mistaken. And they go, oh, stop buying your gear because you don't have this. Oh. More and more people coming in, so we're going to sign off.
Thanks for watching.
See you later.